Welcome to the One Fall Podcast. I'm Joel Johnson, and I'm joined again by Doug Winnipeg. I didn't scare you away from the last podcast. How's it going, Doug?
Yeah, it's going all right.
So we are talking about this weekend with, in regards to WWE's, what would you say, second biggest show, third biggest show of the year for them?
I would say probably the third.
Third? What do you have second? Yeah.
Let's see. Okay, so WrestleMania is number one, obviously. Yeah. Royal Rumble is up there, and that's what I thought. Like, if you told me to, and then SummerSlam, and then I think that probably Survivor Series as well.
Yeah, because those are the four kind of main ones that's been going on for, I think, respectively, all of them have been going for 20 plus years, so they have all stood out as being kind of staples. There's been big moments across all four of them. But I agree, I think this is the third biggest pay-per-view. Arguably, this is NXT's WrestleMania with NXT Brooklyn 4, which has produced some incredible moments over the years. So, any thoughts on wrestling before we jump in? Any comments you want to throw in before we start running down the cards, Doug?
Let's see. I'm glad to see that... well, what's his name's back? Sorry.
Ambrose.
Ambrose, yeah. And he came back in a pretty good, when I was watching Raw, it was a pretty good Raw, actually, in general. I sometimes you zone out, but that one I was able to keep on top of it. And, yeah, I'm pretty excited for that match, I guess.
Ambrose came back, and I guess we can touch on this before we head into those shows. Ambrose came back, and he looked different than when he first came in. When he was getting injured, he looked a little. He still had muscle mass to him, but he's a little bit thinner, and he had the long hair that he had, and now more or less clean shaven on the top, beard. He's bulked up considerably, and he just looks like someone that you wouldn't want to run into down the street. And I think that's where they're going with Ambrose. He looked really good, and he looked like he had some pep in his step. And there's, I think, bright things for Ambrose. Would you think of his look?
I actually loved it. I thought it, like, you know, he kind of came out, and they did it the perfect way. They're like talking about. You know, it's like, well, I'll have a lunatic in my corner. It's just, and then he comes out, and yeah, he has that extra muscle mass. He looks more dangerous, which is a big thing. And then he doesn't have, like, I was never a big fan of this scraggly, like, greased up hair that he always walked around in.
Yeah.
So yeah. I thought this was a much better look. I was pretty excited when he came back. I knew, like, as I was watching it, they were talking about the contracts of, earlier on. They said, well, if Drew McIntyre is going to be in your corner, then somebody has to be in your corner. And it was just kind of, I remember just thinking, yeah, that's definitely going to be Dean Ambrose or maybe Jason Jordan, but maybe Dean Ambrose. So when it happened, you know, you kind of already figured it out, but it was still great to see.
Yeah. And I think that it's definitely an example, because I remember when Ambrose was white hot heading into WrestleMania 32, I believe, when it was Hunter versus Roman in the main event. And Ambrose was challenging at that house show kind of pay-per-view, that Roadblock. And he got a massive reaction from that. And then he went in and had that program with Brock that really fizzled out with the match that they had. And now this feels like a really reinvigorated Dean Ambrose that I think could definitely start nipping at the heels of both his respective Shield mates of Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins, who he's teaming with. Here's a question for you, because this is the minute Ambrose came back, this was the question on everyone's mind, is when is Ambrose going to turn heel? Does it happen at SummerSlam, or does this happen a ways down still?
I would say that it happens. I would like to see them reform the Shield, at least for a little bit of a run, and then have them turn heel. I think that would maximize the, you know, the moment and the matches that are coming up, because I think everybody knows that eventually that's going to happen, right?
Yeah. And I guess my other question with this is they talk about Ambrose turning heel, but can you turn Ambrose heel? Because you heard that reaction, and he seems to be one of the few guys that get a continuous strong response, and that was even regardless of how he was booked from the company standpoint. Is it possible to turn Ambrose heel? Do you think they could find a way to have him twist the dagger like Seth did when he turned heel on the Shield the first time? You think there's any way to kind of recapture that with Ambrose and propel him as this monster heel?
I'm trying to think. I think you can. I think you can turn most people heel. And it also there's a little bit different because, you can still be heel and still get the audience reaction, right? But I would say, if he did something with I guess you could do like traditional ways to turn people heel, have them backstab them, or get what's like a Triple H involved and have him be his new lackey. Like basically that's almost like how the WWE is like, hey, we need someone to turn heel. Let's go those two routes 90% of the time. So I think that's probably if they were gonna do that. That might be the way to do it.
Yeah, no, I agree. It'll be interesting to see. Ambrose now coming back is a very interesting wrinkle and very much a crowded main event scene for Monday Night Raw. There's a lot of different people vying and jockeying for that position. So it's going to be interesting to see how they go. And Ambrose is, it appears that Ambrose is another hungry shark that's been thrown into the water, and he's going to be scary and deadly. Which is a good thing because I think that forces some competition between these guys, and hopefully this pushes them and we as viewers continue to reap the benefits of it.
I was thinking that maybe they and really actually if they tried to turn him heel against especially against somebody like Roman, it would do the opposite. Everybody would would do the opposite of anything they're trying to do with Roman right now if they tried to turn Dean Ambrose heel against him and make him face, right?
What was I gonna say? And it's funny you bring up Roman because he's another guy I'd like to talk about quickly. But it's gonna be very interesting because you're absolutely right. Anytime Roman is used as the catalyst for a heel turn, it doesn't work usually because more people Roman more and more at this point seems to have this go away heat. Oh no, we're doing the same thing over and over again. I don't think people hate Roman the person. I think people hate Roman the booking of Roman Reigns. This constant beratement of we gotta keep pushing Roman, we gotta keep pushing Roman. And you're absolutely right. If they try to turn Ambrose against Roman, you suddenly have a bigger problem on your hands. I think the other thing is maybe Roman and Dean could turn together. Maybe Dean becomes the muscle to help protect Roman Reigns.
I could see that as well. I hadn't thought about that. And then you'd have to build a secondary team, because in that case they would try to push him as heels. And what tag team or stable has enough heel heat to make that worthwhile, right?
Yeah, see, and that's the thing. You look at, and that there's a bigger problem within WWE that can't easily happen. You should have a lot of pieces moving together, but I don't know. It's gonna be interesting. I was gonna ask you, what do you think about the segment with Roman, Paul Heyman, and Brock Lesnar? You think that was the final image heading into your main event for SummerSlam? What do you think of it?
I do find it funny that they're trying so hard to make Brock Lesnar just the most evil guy ever, and like they're doing it in such a way that like I'm pretty sure at this point Kurt Angle is contractually obligated to say he's the worst champion ever. Like he said that. I'm not joking. If you go back on the last like four Raws. That he says that in his whenever he has to talk about Brock. Maybe it's working. But I thought it'll make a good looking promo, and it just kind of adds to the heel side of Paul Heyman. There actually was kind of a moment when I thought, oh crap, they could actually make this into something. When he Paul Heyman struggled through those Samoan words, and and it looked like he was about to like, oh, okay, well maybe I will join him. So I don't know. It was a little bit of a shock. I guess you'll have to see. I think they've done as much as they can to pump up the main event. I'm assuming it's the main event. But who knows? Hopefully it's turned into something. If not, the promos may be good, but if it's not a good match, then it wouldn't really matter anyways.
Yeah, no, and you're absolutely right. You head into any, you've had this build now where there is some intrigue with Heyman and that. I could have done without the pepper spray and then Brock coming out and attacking. I think there could have been a way that you could have had it where Heyman wasn't a distraction for Roman. Brock just came out and attacked him, and it looked like he was going to go after Paul. And you could build a little bit more intrigue heading into SummerSlam of, is Paul going to side with Roman? What's going on here? I think that was kind of, you remember the promo last week from Heyman, where he's sitting there and he hasn't shaved and he's almost crying and he's just broken down during this whole segment that was very well done. You could have kind of built off that further along, but I mean, ultimately Heyman is a slippery snake in the grass that will, he's the scorpion in so many ways. You remember the story of the scorpion that rides the frog, and the frog gets the scorpion to promise not to sting him. The scorpion, they get across, and they don't even get across, and the scorpion stings the frog, and the frog's like, what? We're both gonna die now. Why'd you do that? It's like, it's in my nature. So this was very much a Paul Heyman in his nature. This is typical Heyman doing. I don't know. It's this build. There have been a couple moments where it's intrigued me, and there have been a couple moments that the crowd's cheered for Roman, and you're very much kind of starting to see a little bit of a swing. I don't think Brooklyn's going to swing the way they had hoped, but I this is as good as it's going to get, and it would be a misstep not to put the title on Roman at SummerSlam, or at least have him win and then have the Money in the Bank cashed in. You've been trying this for 3-4, it feels like a decade for Roman. I think it's now just finally time to deliver. Do you think they do that, or is WWE going to do their, you think you know what's coming, but we got a surprise for you?
Yeah, it's one of those things where nowadays, I'm just not sure exactly what, it feels like they sometimes just throw curveballs at us for the sake of throwing a curveball, right? Like, it's, even if it doesn't make sense, even if, like, you're looking at the overall picture of the company, like, this guy should be in this position for the good of the company, they'll be like, no, we're not going to do that. He's going to lose to whoever at Clash of Champions, and you're like, wait a second, that doesn't make sense. But you know, who knows? And I guess in a way it's good, because if we knew the outcome of all the pay-per-views, that wouldn't be very fun, right? No. Like, there'd be no point in talking about it. But at the same time, sometimes you kind of throw up your hands and say, there has to be like a point where it makes sense. And I don't know if I guess you can argue on both sides whether having Brock keep the title or giving it to Roman, where it makes sense. But I just feel like at this point, they should, because another thing too is this particular, feud just isn't getting anybody excited, right? Like, I don't know a single person who's like, dude, I can't wait for Brock versus Roman. 3 or, well, you know, whatever it is, how often they've fought before, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like they need to end this feud, and then maybe give it to Roman, and then let Roman, you know, do something else, find a new feud, that isn't Lashley, right? So,
yeah.
So who knows?
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with you. It's going to move on, but I think a big factor in all of this is if the company wants to move on, and if they're banking on Brock having both titles, the UFC and the Universal, and they want that image, because Vince loves his images. So I think that's something that we could see. You watched more Raw than me, and this was the big story heading into Monday Night Raw. Above everything else that happened, was Renee Young commentary desk taking the place of Coachman. How did she do, in your opinion?
I thought she did well. I didn't think to myself, oh, that she's completely out of her element. I thought that maybe she didn't. I actually don't think she spoke enough. Like, I feel like she probably could have jumped in a bit more in the conversation and stuff. But at no point was I thinking this is a bad decision on anybody's part. I feel like, you know, this may even just be a cold run for her to actually join the desk permanently, which I think would be great, especially with the whole women's revolution happening right now, or whatever they're calling it. So I thought she did well, and you know, I could see her taking over or doing it more often.
Yeah, no, from what I gathered, she was very quiet during Ambrose's return, which I think was done on purpose. But at the same time, I think that from what I heard from her, she never once stood out, and never once did she say something that I cringed at, where I was like, oh, this is... Because there have been times with both Coachman and Booker T that I've been kind of like, and Michael Cole included, where they've said something. I'm like, yeah, I'm checking out a commentary. I'm not interested in listening to this. She never once had any moment. And I thought she had a really good rapport with Corey Graves, which I think ultimately could lead to her taking more of a permanent spot. And I think if you're going to have a three-man booth, I think she's the perfect third wheel for... Graves and Michael Cole. You can move Coachman to SmackDown and have him be there, but I think having Renee on Raw makes a lot of sense, and you're going to hear a lot more from her. She is doing I believe she's doing color commentary for the Mae Young Classic 2, so we should hear a bunch more from her in the coming weeks and kind of get a better idea. And I think with anything that you do, practice makes perfect, and I think the more she does it, I think the better off she's going to be. She's one of the best interviews. She's spot on for what you need for her role that she does, and I think they need to start capitalizing on her and use her more moving forward.
Yeah, I thought she did a good job. I do feel like she was quiet at times, I feel like that would just come in time anyways, right? Another time too is sometimes you're listening to them, like Booker T and Cole, and they're bickering about something, right? Or they're like taking cheap shots at each other, and sometimes it's funny, but more often than not, it's just kind of like, okay, guys, you know, the B team's fighting right now, so let's get back onto whatever, right? So that's I don't know. I thought she did well. I feel like she wasn't perfect, but she would get better in time, almost certainly.
I completely agree. That's Monday Night Raw. SmackDown. Did you see any of SmackDown, Doug?
I did not see any of SmackDown.
I saw a bit of SmackDown. I saw a little bit more. So I can the vignette video package between Bryan and Miz is great. I'm really excited for that match at SummerSlam. That is a match that I saw a lot of people complaining about that they're having it at SummerSlam. A lot of fears that Bryan's not going to re-sign with WWE. But I mean, when you announce a big part of your WWE video game is a Daniel Bryan mode, essentially, with Showcase, I think you feel pretty confident that the guy's going to be staying with your company. And I think a series of matches between Bryan and Miz are far more beneficial than just the one match, because you can tell a long-term story between both guys, and I think that you can have it build up to something more. And I mean, if Bryan's going to leave, then you have Bryan lose at SummerSlam. It's really that simple. No, that's a vignette worth checking, and the promo from Samoa Joe at the end was just, part of me wants the title to stay on AJ forever. I just like seeing AJ with a title, but AJ Styles, they could eat AJ. Samoa Joe could easily win the title, and I wouldn't complain at all. The fact that these two are feuding for what I believe and firmly believe is the main title in the company, is crazy to me. If you told me that 10 years ago, I would have said you were insane. There's no way that's going to happen. There's no way Vince would ever allow anything like that to happen. And we live in that world now, where AJ is now the longest reigning SmackDown champion. So we'll see if his reign continues or if it's cut short. Since you didn't see it, then we'll continue. We'll carry on to something a little bit more sad, especially for Calgarians. But the passing of Jim the Anvil Neidhart. Any thoughts on that, Doug? Because that suddenly broke on Monday. Monday.
You know, the thing is I think most kids growing up in Calgary who were fans grew up in a time when the Hart Foundation and Bret Hart were at their best, and so I think most people around this area are just natural Bret Hart or Hart Foundation fans, right? And so I remember as a kid, I remember watching Jim the Anvil Neidhart in his prime, and so I do have a lot of really great memories about the guy. He had that I remember as a kid enjoying his laugh. I can't do it, but like he'd have this stupid laugh, and you just feel and you know you're I would have been about like 7 or 8 at the time, or maybe even younger, and you just enjoy stuff like that.
Yeah,
You know, it's
yeah.
The bushwhackers and people being funny, and and then later on when they reformed the Hart Foundation, that was just a beautiful time to be I guess a Canadian wrestling fan, not just even a Calgarian wrestling fan. And it just gave you reasons to cheer for the guy, and I always did have a soft spot for everybody in that stable, and that includes the Anvil.
Yeah, no, he. That was the first. That's the first thing that sticks out with the Anvil is the laugh, is the beer tugging, his promos with the Early Heart Foundation, and just Jim always seemed like a guy that would get up to trouble. Always seemed like that mischievous guy that there was always something going on in the background, and that's not a knock against the guy. I think that was Jim. He was a guy that would get into things, and there would be the night would not be boring with Jim the Anvil Neidhart. And it definitely, you sit there and you think about that Hart Foundation, and I didn't fully comprehend how big of a deal Jim the Anvil Neidhart was until his passing. And you saw he was on the front page of both papers here in town. He got coverage from all the news outlets, which some wrestlers just don't get. And he got coverage, and there were a lot of fun Jim stories that were swapped around, which I thought were really nice. But I think out of all of this, the most haunting image out of all of this is that image of all five of the 97 Hart Foundation with their arms raised up, and Brett's the only one that's in color, and the rest of them are faded to black and white because they've all passed away, and Brett's the last guy standing from that fa from the 97 Hart Foundation. That's surreal, and for a guy that's been through so much, this can't be an easy time for him.
Yeah, the and actually in many ways that's where I remember him the most, was around that the when they reunited the Hart Foundation, because like he it like that's when I was growing up, that was one of my favorite moments. All of that stuff was amazing, and like and then that was also around I don't know. You know, you're kind of growing up in that time, and you don't really understand things. And so I do remember I remember all that stuff, and then I also remember it in the context of the Montreal Screwjob, which happened around that time. You'll have to forgive me. I didn't read up on him before this, but I'm just thinking about memories I have of him, right? And so, and then in his later career, I know that he went overseas. At least I'm pretty sure he did. And so I don't know. I agree with you. There was a lot of outpouring. Like in this area, and you know, maybe it was like everywhere, but especially like on television here. I guess he really meant a lot to a lot of different people.
And I mean, you look at it, he's one of the few guys that Brett never had. There was never a bad word between Brett and Jim, and I think that speaks volumes to both men that was a long-standing friendship and brotherhood between the two of them that you don't often see in professional wrestling. And to see something like that, especially with you see the world of professional wrestling, where there's disparaging things said on a daily basis about your coworkers and your colleagues, either alive or dead, and for the two of them to have always gotten along is a true testament to both men and what they were able to accomplish together. I definitely feel for Natty. This can't be an easy thing. She was supposed to wrestle on Monday, so and it sounds like this kind of came out of left field. So this is definitely a hard time, and definitely send all the thoughts and prayers to the Hart and the Neidhart family, because this just can't be easy. I was stunned when I read this.
Yeah, I was too. You know, I think we both woke up that day and were like, "Whoa, this is this is completely out of left field." Because most times, you know, sadly, when somebody passes along in the wrestling scene, generally, you have an inkling, right? Like you hear stories about somebody, and you're like, "Okay, well, that guy's gonna be around for too long." So, it does sadden me. I'm thinking a little bit more about what I know of him, what I remember, and it's that whole like America versus Canada stuff. That was some great, great booking. That's why they'll always have a soft spot in my heart, because, even nowadays they haven't done it, as far as to my knowledge, they haven't really done it since. Had a two countries' traditional rivals like Canada, United States, face off in the ring like that, right? I wish they would eventually go back to it, but just thinking about that stuff, it just and I just have all these warm memories of all of that stuff, and of Davey Boy Smith, Brian Pillman, everybody else who was involved in that. Yeah, it was and it's just sad to see so many people from the Hart Foundation that I've passed on, and it must be hard for the family.
If there's ever one moment that stands out for me for that group, because that's a big thing. You'd mentioned you hadn't done a lot of research, and admittedly I hadn't done. I know the basics of Jim, and I know the broad information on Jim the Anvil Neidhart, but I think the biggest thing, and this is one of the things I love about wrestling, is it's not necessarily about knowing every fact about the guy or a performer. It's about those moments. And from the sounds of it, Jim the Anvil Neidhart had created a lot of little moments for young wrestling fans that eventually grew up fondly remembering those promos. But the one thing that I'll always remember about Jim the Anvil Neidhart and the Hart Foundation as a whole is that big pay-per-view that they had here in Calgary, where it was the Hart Foundation versus Austin, Goldust, Legion of Doom, and Ken Shamrock. And just how loud Calgary was, and just how passionate they were for these five men that had come through Calgary, through Stampede Wrestling. And just the love and admiration for these five guys were... It was almost deafening listening to that on a TV. And that's... If there's anyone that has never seen that, that is well worth checking out on the WWE Network.
Oh yeah.
Have you seen that match, Doug?
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, I definitely have, but I haven't seen it in a while. I feel I'm pretty sure my brother went to that. My brother Graham and my brother Jason, they both went to that pay per view. I don't know when it was, off the top of my head, mid 90s.
Yeah.
I remember being too young to go. But we did, every time they came through Calgary, somehow we found a way to make it. And, in the later years, mainly for house shows, because they didn't do Raws and things like that there. I think my brothers were there, and I just remember, I don't remember where I saw that match, but I've definitely seen it before.
Yeah, that is definitely something worth checking out, because you don't get that reaction a lot in professional wrestling these days, and to see something like that is truly remarkable. And like you said, that whole Canada versus U.S. was a very remarkable run, that you could have be a babyface one night and a heel the next. Is there anything else you want to add, Doug? Is there anything that I skipped over for Raw, SmackDown, or Jim?
No, I don't think so. No? I think I'm trying to think. No, like outside the pay-per-views, I can't think of anything.
All right, well then let's jump in. Let's start with Saturday, which is the show with a lot of intrigue around it. It is NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 4. This is their money show. There has been tremendous matches that have happened at this card, and for them to get to 4 is very impressive with the revolving talent that NXT has. Just a quick note, that there is a belief that we will see the stand in the crowd moment of one of the standout independent talents of Matt Riddle. Matt Riddle used to be a UFC fighter before he got suspended due to marijuana use. I would describe him in the similar veins as Kurt Angle. He is a guy that's picked up wrestling very quickly, and he could easily be a massive star. So expect to see him in the crowd. He's someone to keep an eye out. But let's get to the matches. One of the first matches we've got on this card, Doug, the Velveteen Dream versus EC3 in a singles match. What do you think of both of these men? What do you think we can expect from these two?
I would say that, I think I mentioned last time that I really like Velveteen Dream. He's definitely grown on me over time. And EC3, I don't know much about him. I've seen him a couple times, but I don't. I was actually in the middle of watching NXT when we started this. We're doing this on a Wednesday, but I always I feel like both these guys, because they were tag team people, right?
Both had done, okay. had done different tag teams, so they've made their stretches single guys. EC3 really came into his own doing TNA, and Dream really has stepped in as he's done a lot of jobs. So I'm very interested to see where both these guys kind of go. Both guys could use a win here, so I'm interested to see who ultimately gets the W. I do think it should be Dream, but it could also be EC3. I like Velveteen's gimmick. I like EC3's gimmick. So this is kind of either guy could win, and I'd be happy.
Oh, yeah.
Next up is the tag team match for the NXT Tag Team Champions, Undisputed Era, Mustache Mountain. They played hot potato with the title. Mustache won it. Then Undisputed Era won it back. Kyle O'Reilly and Roderick Strong and Tyler Bates and Trent Seven are both really good in-ring talent, so I expect a very good match here. This will be one of the matches that could steal the show. All four men are very good in the ring. They had a five-star match on an NXT taping, so these guys can deliver, and I think with the bright lights of Brooklyn, I think both men will deliver.
Yeah, And I do like the Undisputed Era. I feel like they're, I don't know. I think they have they're going in the right direction. They have the right kind of heat. You don't see really good stables nowadays. And so, like for me, I always wonder if they're going to keep the Undisputed Era, when eventually they're, you know, put up into the next level there.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm pretty excited. The tag team champions, I'm excited for that match. Hopefully it's a good one.
Yeah, I have belief. And speaking of your love for Undisputed Era, you've got the leader, Adam Cole, Bebe, defending the NXT North American champion against an upstart, a very talented fellow in Ricochet. What do you think, Doug? Do you think that these guys stand out? Do you think they deliver on the big show of Brooklyn?
I think so. You know, I didn't watch a lot of independent stuff, and I haven't watched a lot of independent stuff. But you know, it's a little bit different when you're kind of somebody who hasn't really heard much about the independents in general, but then you start hearing their names. Like when someone gets to that level where they're like, I knew about Ricochet before he had ever been to the before he was in NXT, and Adam Cole, I remember. Actually, I first, when they introduced them to the NXT world, but like both of these guys, I know they come from these big independent stuff, and I'm glad that they're kind of doing it right in the NXT where they're building up two guys and they have this collision course that makes you say, hey, I want to check out that match.
Cole always takes an extra risk at takeover shows, so there's going to be some shenanigans that are going to have you jump out of your seat. There's at least a couple matches here that could steal the show. This I like the NXT North American Championship. I think letting Cole have a nice run with it has definitely brought added value to it. I was yelling for years that they needed to have a second title in NXT to give these guys something to work for as well as the main title. So this should be a good singles match for the two of them, and their careers are just going to keep progressing forward. Next up is the, I guess you'd call it the co-main event, a singles match for the NXT Women's Championship, Shayna Baszler versus Kairi Sane. We saw a little bit of darkness from Kairi Sane. These two were the finals for the tournament for the Mae Young Classic. How do you think this plays out, Doug? Because I think it's time to move Shayna on to the main, but you could also leave her in NXT. This is really one of those matches of if Shayna wants to move on, I think she drops the title, or if they want to keep her on, then she retains. What do you think?
I think so too. Kairi Sane since Mae Young, right? That I remember watching it and thinking, you know, the problem is sometimes when you watch a bunch of people, especially people you're just being introduced to, sometimes you don't nothing sticks to you, right? Like you watch a bunch of different matches, especially for the Mae Young Classic, and then it all becomes just a blur in your mind, right? But I remember Kairi saying she had the interesting look, and then she had that ridiculous elbow drop that always looks dangerous. I really liked her in the Mae Young Classic, and Shayna Baszler. I feel like they're gonna bring her up eventually, right? Like she's on that next level. I don't think you can do really anything wrong with these two, right? Like I just hopefully it's a good match.
No, I agree. I think this could absolutely be the crowning moment for Kairi Sane, and this could also be another feather in the cap for Shayna Baszler and her run with the title. I do wonder if she gets involved with Ronda in some way, because Shayna Baszler and Ronda are friends and part of the Four Horsewomen of MMA. So I wonder, if that they're going to start drawing that connection for potentially doing something at Survivor Series. So that's another factor floating around there. So there's a lot of these matches, either guy or woman could win the match, which I think is a huge, huge sticking point for NXT, is either of them could go over, which to me as a wrestling fan is a big deal, because both logically could win and that could help progress the story forward.
Oh yeah.
So the main event, the fact that these two guys are in the main event is crazy. I've liked both of them, but admittedly never thought they would be at the level that they are. Sadly, this is not a triple threat. Aleister Black got hurt, and it's not a good injury. It's below the belt, and I'd rather not talk about it because it makes me squirm. So he's not part of this. So they had to kind of change this on the fly. But Tommaso Ciampa versus Johnny Gargano in a last man standing match. Are they going to be alive at the end of this match, Doug, or is someone going to be taken out in a body bag?
what is this? The fourth time they're going against each other?
This is the third.
Third, okay, yeah. But I've always liked them. Every time it's they do these big cat and mouse things, right? And you've grown to hate Ciampa. But in a good way, right? Like yeah. And Johnny, he's the face, obviously. I feel like I think we were talking about this earlier on in the week that it's at one point you didn't look at these two guys, or maybe you looked at Johnny and thought this guy could go on, but you didn't really think that when he saw Ciampa. Like you didn't look at him and think this guy is that next level talent, but you know, he just seems to impress me, right? Like he's a guy you just love to hate. He gets under your skin. Somehow, you know, sometimes if you have more than, you know, two matches in a, cause I think, they headlined, this Brooklyn event last year, didn't they?
Yes, I believe so. I believe that's where the turn happened. If I remember correctly, I could be wrong. That could have been Chicago, but it was either Chicago or Brooklyn where they headlined, and that's where the turn happened. So this has been a story going on for a year and over. So it's crazy how long this has gone and how Ciampa's worked the social media and got people to chant obscene things at him, and he doesn't have an entrance music. He's changed his look, and good little Johnny, whose heart's kind of fallen a little bit to darkness with his mistake on costing Black his championship. So this is good storytelling. This is simply just good storytelling from start to finish.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited for it. It was just bad luck that Aleister, he got hurt the way he did. But I think you know, I'm excited to see where they can take this next sort of thing, because it feels like even looking back, it feels like they've done a lot with this storyline. And sometimes if you stick to a storyline for too long, it gets that level where you're just thinking, okay, what can they do next? Maybe it's time to move on. So if they're able to take this to this next level for this third time, it would just show good things about both these guys going ahead.
Yeah, no, I would agree. This one I'm going to get your prediction on. Is this Johnny's crowning moment, or does Ciampa retain?
I would say, I think Ciampa is probably going to win. I feel like that's the best way to do it. Because, you know why? I imagine that, and this is just in my head somewhere. I don't know if they're going to do this or if this is even close to the actual plan, but I always feel like they should go up to the next level, to WWE, not together, but at the same time, and then have his crowning achievement at like a SummerSlam or a something. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, absolutely. I think This could definitely be the new version of Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, where this could be something that carries on. Sami really didn't get his revenge until being on the main roster, so this is something that could transition into there. I'm gonna pick a little differently. I think this is Johnny's big moment, and Johnny vanquishes the evil Tommaso Ciampa finally.
And you could go either way on this, but I was just thinking that if I was thinking about booking this, I would have it so that Johnny would lose in somehow an even more heartbreaking fashion, and then I would bring them both up to the next level, have one guy on Raw, one guy on SmackDown, and have a match at SummerSlam. Survivor Series. Like, I think if I was booking it, that's how I would try to do it. But again, if Johnny wins, it just adds to that next level of, like, everybody's like, finally, this guy was able to get his revenge. Cause yeah, like, Ciampa has been such a jerk to the guy. You know, you're always trying to cheer for him. Sometimes you just straight up feel sorry for Johnny. Either booking is good. And it also shows not only the talent of the guy, but when something's working, right? And so sometimes you just gotta lead into it and let these stories play themselves out.
I absolutely agree. I think the main roster could definitely take some pointers from what NXT done, because when we're going through this card, I can look at this and make an argument for both people winning, and that to me is a good thing, because you can sit there and you can be like, it could go either way. This is really entertaining to think that either way this could go, and I would be satisfied with the end for this. So, oh, yeah. NXT Saturday, must watch for any wrestling fan. There's a lot of good stuff. There'll probably be a few surprises there, and God only knows what they're going to do in that main event. That main event is going to be a car wreck that you just can't look away from. And speaking of car wrecks, we're transitioning to SummerSlam with the potential for a whole new different kind of car wreck. There are 13 matches on this card. We're going to pepper through these, and we're going to focus on some of the matches that we have a little bit more invested interest on. Let's start with the pre-show. We got the B team defending their tag team champions against the Revival. What do you think? Does the B team's luck continue, or does the Revival finally shatter the B team's dream?
It would be pretty dickish if WWE was like, okay, you're only in the kickoff show, but we're still gonna this heat you're building, we're gonna douse it right now in the kickoff show. So I think just based on that, I think the B team is probably gonna win. But you know, the thing is. I kind of rolled my eyes when the B team first started.
Yeah.
Like, I thought, oh, with the Miz, these guys aren't going anywhere, right? But they're getting a little bit of heat. I actually didn't hate their match, their matches. I'm glad, right? Like, and they're like, I don't have any numbers in front of me or anything, but I'm sure they're selling B team shirts and then, you know, whatever the case is. I'm glad that they're kind of getting to that level, because I've always had a little bit of a soft spot for Curtis Axel.
Yeah.
Just because I was such a big fan of Mr. Perfect, and I was always hoping that, you know, the second, or I guess the third generation, this guy would be able to find his legs, and I feel like he might have finally found something that will push him to, you know, just a low level jobber to the next level. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No. You know, not every guy is going to main event WrestleMania. There is a very limited 1% of guys that will get to that level. But if you can have a good run with the tag team, and you can be that memorable tag team or that memorable mid-card guy, that's not a bad spot to be in, because you still get those paychecks. You still have a job that you can come to and work. And yeah, I don't see the B team losing the titles either. And I think it's just it's a nice way to keep running. I didn't think I'd like these guys as much as I do, but I quite enjoy their act. They're a breath of fresh air for Monday Night Raw. Next up on the card, we have a mixed tag team match. We have Rusev and Lana taking on Andrade Cienalmos and Selena Vega. This is happening on Rusev Day, so is that any impact on this on the finish of this match, Doug?
Yeah, the thing is, I don't understand it, but when people still make Rusev Day jokes, I still giggle for some reason. It doesn't even make sense because it's the most played out and possibly the worst joke currently running in the WWE, but for some odd reason, everybody loves it. I love it. And there's just something about Rusev, and it's almost disheartening that Rusev has been relegated, I should say, to a kickoff match, right? Like, I feel like, I feel like this guy, I don't know, they need to turn him face and put him up against heels, right? Like, I don't know, for the past little while, they every time at Rusev, it just seems like they're trying to push him as a heel. Like, they're trying to make him, like, you know, I don't know. I just feel like that's completely wrong direction for him at this point. They need to start putting this guy up against Randy Orton or something like that. I don't know, but I do feel like it's a little bit of a missed opportunity to have these guys relegated to the kickoff match. So I don't know.
Yeah, I think this should be a good match because I think I really like Almost. I like Rusev. Selena Vega has impressed me, and Lana does fine in the ring. She does exactly what you need her to do. For her position, I think this could be a positive sign because Almost is a heel, so this could be the direction where they either are going to just turn Rusev full on heel because he can't win this match, and that's the Rusev Day is dead, or they are going to slowly build him up as a babyface. I think this should be a fine match. I think Almost and Vega will probably pick up the win. Rusev doesn't have much luck on pay-per-views, so I think that unlucky streak will continue.
Sadly. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what it is. Like, they have him lose. They put him up against somebody, and you're thinking, oh, they should give this guy, you know, whatever, and they don't. I don't know. Rusev, they... You know, the Happy Rusev Day stuff hit. He became like a phenomenon. People at like university or college games were like chanting Rusev Day. Like, I just feel like they never truly capitalized on all of that stuff. You know what I mean? And just to see him where he is in this pay-per-view, maybe there's thought behind it. Maybe they're pushing him in a certain direction now. But anyways, I'll be watching the kickoff show, so hopefully it's good. Definitely watchable. So.
Yeah, it doesn't have a bad start for the show at all. And I'm going off this order of the card here as we enter into the main show. This match we'll talk about a little bit more. This is a match that could be a culmination, could be a sign of many things to come, and could potentially be one of your big main events for WrestleMania. It is a blood feud. These two do not like each other. It is Daniel Bryan versus The Miz.
Oh, I thought you were building up Cedric Alexander's match, and I was like, "Whoa, this is how I remember it all."
Yeah.
No, I'm joking. It is like, oh my goodness, what's happening with Cedric Alexander that I haven't heard of? I think, you know, I always like it. I think the WWE does really well when the lines between, you know, between what's real and what's not are blurred. And Daniel Bryan and The Miz, they've had this relationship where, I'm fairly certain they actually do hate each other, you know, behind the scenes, right? Like, and if they don't, then they're doing a great job portraying that, right?
Yep.
And they had those things where, like, you know, Daniel Bryan, when he was injured, he The Miz called him out numerous times. Daniel Bryan, they had those barbs that they're sending to each other. And so now that Daniel Bryan is resting again, I feel that this was the natural. I think everybody wanted to see this match because everybody has heard about these two guys who you're not sure if they like each other or not. Like, I don't know if this is the work or if it's an actual thing between them. I think it could be a great match, and I feel like they're gonna Like, I think most people think that this is going to be the first of a trilogy, or there's going to be a series to, built from this.
I think this is absolutely something that you could build a trilogy. And I think if Brian re-signs, and I'm feeling more confident that he will re-sign, I think this is your main event, one of your main events for WrestleMania, is Miz finally beats, Miz beats AJ, and then it goes on to, Brian wins the Rumble, and then these two square off at WrestleMania, where Brian finally gets his win over the Miz, which is in a big, extraordinary fashion, and launches you into having Brian work with heels like Orton and Nakamura next summer.
Oh yeah,
that's just me. We'll see what happens. For all we know, Brian could be main eventing the Ring of Honor, New Japan, MSG show. So, who knows what's going to happen with that. Next match up on the card. This is weird because I thought this was on the pre-show. Maybe it's not. Maybe I'm being lied to on this rundown that I've got. But we've got Cedric Alexander facing Drew Gulak in the true blood feud, Doug. These two despise each other. What do you expect from both these men, and will it deliver?
Okay, so I'll fully admit right now that I haven't watched any of 205 Live since Enzo left. I have heard a little bit about it, and I always think to myself, hey, I should check out 205 Live today, but I never actually, like, you know, go through and check it out, right? But Cedric Alexander, he's been good. I feel like I should get back into 205 Live, but, you know, the thing is I only have a couple hours in a day in which I'm not doing something, and I tend to invest that into Raw. Raw, sometimes NXT, and then occasionally SmackDown. And I just, to throw 205 Live in there, I'm not 100% sure where, you know, but I do definitely need to check that out. But I've always liked Cedric Alexander, and I know even less about, Drew Gulak. So, like, I'm not a good person to be talking about this right now.
No, from what I watch a little bit more 205 Live, Cedric's been good. I personally would have gone with Mustafa Ali, but that's just my personal preference. I think Cedric is a fine champion. I can see Gulak winning here as being the monster heel that they can build up, of just this guy that can stretch you and hurt you, break your bones and just break you down. And he believes that there should be no high flying in 205 Live, so he's working for a better 205 Live. I think you'd quite like his gimmick before you really saw the shift in 205 Live. He had a very politician gimmick of make 205 Live great again, and little different points here and there that's kind of bubbled to the surface, but he's definitely become more of a mean bruiser that will break you down, and I expect to see him to do that to Cedric Alexander at SummerSlam. Shifting on to something that we can talk about, Baron Corbin takes on Finn Balor. He's always got to be smiling. Will Finn be smiling at the end of this night, or will Corbin deep six Balor into the, just dig him through the ring?
I would say, I do the I don't know. I like Finn Balor quite a bit. Baron Corbin, I don't know. I've never really bought into this guy. I don't know what he is. Hopefully they have a good match. I feel like in the same breath as a lot of people, I feel like Finn Balor hasn't ever been used to his full ability. Like, I feel like he could be a guy that you're given in the last match or the second last match of the night. And, you know, and it's not that I have anything against Baron Corbin, but, you know, I don't know. They have this whole thing right now where he's kind of like the a constable, right? Like, he's doing the constable stuff right now. Yeah. I don't know. I guess I don't mind him. There are times when I've outwardly just rolled my eyes whenever he showed up. Nowadays, I don't do that as much with the so constable thing, but I just don't. I just don't feel like this is I don't know. Hopefully this is good. I do like Finn Balor, and I hope that they start pushing one of these two guys. I want to see what kind of person Baron Corbin could turn into if you push him that direction, and especially Finn Balor. I feel like if you gave him the right booking, you could really see some great stuff out of the guy.
Yeah, I mean, Balor, if you go and look at some of his stuff in Japan, I think him as a bad guy could be a lot of fun. But he seems like just a good positive person from the LGBTQ tights that he wore at WrestleMania to just everything that he does from social media. Like there was a point where there was a kid dressed up in like a Finn Balor demon costume, like that Halloween costume that has the fake muscles and everything. And this little kid went up to go ask Finn a question, and this kid got so scared and started to cry. And Finn came down, grabbed the kid, brought him on the stage with him because they were at a comic expo. And the kid got to ask the question and sit with Finn for a couple minutes, which I just. You need stuff like that, and I think that's why they're hard pressed to just let him go full on bad. And I think he's just a really good positive force that I think they absolutely he could be in the last two matches of the night, and I think he could deliver every time. It's a shame he got hurt, and I think he is still owed a Universal title match.
Yeah. Yeah, and another thing too is that we've never talked about is when Baron Corbin cut his hair. So that's no, I'm just joking. But the I don't know. Yeah, hopefully it's good. There are guys that I kind of always cheer for a little bit, and sometimes I just I find a little bit sad when they're not at the places that I want them to be, just as a fan.
Yeah.
But I will say, you know, I'm thinking about Baron Corbin. Yeah, there was a lot of times when. I was always just sort of lukewarm to the guy, and just with his whole Constable gimmick that he's doing right now, you know, he's getting a little bit more screen time. He has that stuff with Roman, you know, I would like to see if this guy has any more in him that he to push him to that next level. Right.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The one thing, and I discussed this on the G1 Climax Review podcast I did with Mo. I love seeing when guys are successful. And it's just guys across the board, because when any guy can either reach their potential or exceed their potential, we as fans benefit from it. And that's it, there's I don't get the rooting for guys to fail, because you could be missing out on something that would be incredible as a fan to see. Shuffling along here, we get into another title match. Hopefully this is longer than 4 seconds, but we'll see. The WWE United States Champion Shinsuke Nakamura versus Jeff Hardy. Is this longer, and does Randy Orton come out and just viciously attack Jeff Hardy and pull on his ear hole? That was no, Don, I don't want to see that anymore.
Yeah, I don't know. Hopefully it's good. I like both of these guys, Shinsuke Nakamura and Jeff Hardy. I've liked them, no, maybe not Shinsuke, because I didn't follow Japan wrestling, but Jeff Hardy, growing up, he was just like him, the Hardy Boys, all of that stuff back in the day were great. The thing is, I never felt Jeff Hardy ever made it to that, to the level that he could have been. I feel like, and it was his fault too, like, because he had all that drug problem stuff, right? Every time they were thinking about pushing him back in the day, he'd always seem to screw himself over, right? But I am just glad to see these guys wrestling. Hopefully it's less, you know, hopefully it's not a 4 second, getting sacked, and then, you know, moving on to the next thing. And, yeah, let's throw Randy Orton in there. We'll,
yeah, he just tear part of his ear off. I thought he was going to do it too. I fully expected him just to tug and blood to come. I was like, no, don't do it. Don't do it. Please don't. But I like to see where Nock is. I mean, I'd like to have seen him win the WWE Championship. But, you know, this is a nice little spot for him. And I think he can build up that U.S. title and hopefully has a good run with it.
No, I agree. I do wish that he did win the title. Yeah, I have nothing good things to say about these two guys. I've always been, they've had soft spot for these guys. And, yeah, hopefully it's I guess in a way it was a good match, the 4 second match, because you're kind of like, oh yeah, okay. But at the same time, you know, if they do it twice in a row, it's gonna be like a, okay, you know, let's do something else now sort of thing, right?
Yeah, you can do it once, but the second time you gotta change it up a little bit, which I'm okay with, because I'd like to see both these guys go for at least 10 minutes or so and kind of let them kind of do their thing, because I think both guys can do it. It's just a matter of letting them do it. Shuffling along here, we've got a triple threat for the WWE SmackDown Women's Championship. We got Carmella defending her title against Charlotte Flair and the pun master herself, Becky Lynch. Does Becky pun her way to being a two-time WWE SmackDown Women's Champion, or is this Charlotte's time to rise above, or does Carmella retain again?
I would be surprised if Carmella retained, honestly. But I like Becky Lynch. I think, you know, I'm just thinking back to the TLC match that they had just recently. And if I remember, like, Becky Lynch, like, the crowd was going crazy for her, right? Like, I just feel like people are behind her. I know I talk to a lot of people about this stuff, and they say that, like, they like her. I don't know a single person who has said, oh, Becky Lynch, forget that person, right? And so I think this might be a good time to give her a little bit of like the championship and see what she can do with it. Like, and another run at it, I should say.
Yeah, I really like Becky. She's loved by the kids. She's loved by the crowd. There's not many bad things you can say. Her puns are great. She can have fantastic matches. She was one of the ones from the Four Horsewomen that she was kind of on the outskirts. You saw a lot with Sasha and Bayley and Charlotte, and you kind of were like, I don't know about Becky. But Becky's always been one of the ones more and more that have grown on me as time has gone on, and I want her to win. I'm a little choked that Charlotte's in the match, because I'm like, no, Becky needs to win this. Let Becky win. And, I mean, Carmella has done a fine job as well as champion. You know, there's a lot of complaints about her as champion, but I think she's done the role of the chicken shit heel is what you need, and she's... I think she's done her service now, and I think it's time to finally pull the trigger on Becky Lynch.
And the thing is Charlotte Flair, you know, she'll get back to being a champion eventually. She's one of those people in the WWE where she'll win like another, you know, six championships in her career going forward. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I just feel though that. You know, you don't look at Becky the same way, and it'd be a nice surprise if she did walk away from SummerSlam with that title.
I would agree. I would absolutely agree. Next match is a singles match for the Intercontinental Championship. It's really not a singles match because we will have some tomfoolery and we will have some shenanigans, but Dolph Ziggler will defend his Intercontinental Champion versus Seth Rollins, Drew McIntyre in Zig's corner, and the Lunatic Fringe, Dean Ambrose, in Rollins' corner. How much plunder happens in this match, and do we get a clean finish? Not who wins, but do we get a clean finish?
I don't know. I think there will almost certainly be some tomfoolery. You know, I've liked what these guys have been doing lately, just on Raw, watching them. I've liked what they're doing. The last pay-per-view, they did an acceptable job. But I feel like they had a great match a couple Raws ago, right? And I feel like they can do it again. And I feel like you know, adding those extra elements of Dean and Drew, like you never know. Like it's actually for me personally, it's the one that I'm kind of looking forward to the most in watching. For SummerSlam, I should say.
Yeah, and I mean, Seth has been white hot. He's cooled off a little bit, but I still think he's a guy that can easily kick it into another gear. And I think both these guys, after what happened with their Iron Man match, will be looking to really shine a positive light on what these guys can do and prove the crowd wrong. And I think both those guys can deliver. I like Drew and Dean, so this is all four guys I like are involved in this match, so this is definitely a match that draws me in and could potentially be a show stealer. Moving along to the singles match, where the Money in the Bank contract is on the line, and should Strowman lose by disqualification or countout, he will lose the contract. So this is Strowman's almost guaranteed title reign is up against Kevin Owens. I personally think that Owens is going to win. I think Owens is going to win the Money in the Bank, and he's going to attempt to cash in. Whether he's successful or not is a totally different ballgame, but I think they're going to have Strowman lose the Money in the Bank to Kevin Owens.
I think so, too. It would, and that's just for the sake of storyline, mostly. I feel like you tell a better storyline if Kevin Owens has the title, if Braun Strowman loses it, and then you could build a feud between them, or you can push Kevin and Kevin Owens to that next level and have him cash in against AJ or whoever wins, or you know, maybe Lesnar. Like that's the thing is if I guess with both of them, you never know. There's like an element of randomness or like a surprise thrown in there. But I feel like if you give Kevin Owens that contract, I think he's a little bit more unpredictable than Braun Strowman. It'd be interesting to see. I think it would be a good move on WWE's part to give him that. And for Braun, I think they should just bring back Nicholas for one more run. I'm messing around with you.
They can finally beat the B team. Someone can stop the B team. Nicholas gets that pinfall victory.
You know, they should just do a full year of just bringing back Nicholas for everything.
And have Braun help him win championships. So he'll become the Intercontinental Champion, and then he'll become the WWE Champion at... he'll pin Brock Lesnar. He's Brock's kryptonite, Doug. Book it. This is must-see television.
It would actually be great if in, 10 years, this Nicholas guy actually becomes a WWE superstar. Because I could, in my mind, I'd be like, that would be writing gold for me. But yeah, even if they brought him back, they should just give him just give Nicholas the belt, just as you said, and he could be, and he'll have like JBL hold it for like 200 some days. I guess AJ Styles beat that just recently, so maybe I should replace his name with that. But I don't know. I'm just talking crap now. So yeah, I don't know. So I don't know. I'm excited to see what happens with that match.
Yeah, because that has some implications for where things could go heading into WrestleMania. Next match we've got is a tag team title match. It is for the SmackDown Tag Team Champions. It is the Bludgeon Brothers defending their title against the New Day. We don't know who it is. It'll be some combination of Big E, Kofi Kingston, and Xavier Woods. Do the New Day win again, or are they going to take a loss to the Man with Hammers?
I don't know. I would say that I don't know. If the Bludgeon Brothers don't win this, just end any sort of feud that they're having. Like I just So they have like this whole idea of like an unstoppable force, right? But like the Bludgeon Brothers, I mean. The New Day, I don't know, their gimmick is great. They've somehow kept the momentum on for a long time. I don't know. In many ways, maybe the New Day. I think the New Day probably wins it.
I'm interested to see, because this is a match that could go either way, and I think it'd be okay. I could see them continuing the Bludgeon Brothers run, but I could also see them easily putting the title on the New Day. There's also a part of me that like to see the New Day not necessarily dissolve, but kind of go on and do some single stuff. I think Big E is absolutely money, and I think you could easily do something with him in a main event scene. He could easily be a guy that challenges AJ heading into Survivor Series. That could be your program, because if you're going to pull the trigger on The Miz, I think that'll be a Royal Rumble thing, but Big E is definitely someone that could fill some time for you. And I think the two of them could have a good match, but I'm ready to see some singles matches from those guys, but I'm also okay if they continue to be a tag team. The fact that they've been going for almost 5 years is very impressive. And they haven't gotten overly stale. There have been moments where they've kind of hit lulls, but they've always found a way to rebound.
Yeah, and that's the thing about New Day. Probably one of the most impressive things about that entire thing is the fact that, yes, there are times when you're like, okay, that's enough with the pancakes, or okay, that's enough with the whatever, right? But then they kind of pull you back in somehow. They're like, okay, this is cool, right? Like you're and that's just the sign of a really great tag team, like not just tag team but stable. I feel like if they did do the singles route or whatever they decided to do, I feel like they'd be able to morph into something else, right? And kind of rise to that occasion.
Yeah, I honestly think I can see them sticking together, heading into next year, and potentially their WrestleMania match, depending on where contracts are signed. But I could see them potentially signing and doing something. The Young Bucks and Kenny Omega, the Elite, taking on the New Day, because I think that would be the intro program for those three men coming into the company if they choose to. And I think that's why you got to kind of keep you can't have a horrible split with the New Day. I think you need to keep the New Day around as at least somewhat of a unit that hasn't split apart yet, so that you can always go to that match, which I think would be a tremendous match for wrestling fans. Moving along here, we're getting to the final three matches. So these are the three matches that could play a role that you will probably see in the fourth or fifth hour, depending on how long SummerSlam goes. But we've got the phenomenal AJ Styles defending his WWE Championship against the Samoan Submission Machine, Samoa Joe. What are these guys going to deliver to us?
I think it'll be a good match. You know, AJ Styles, he performs great with most people, I'd say with everybody. Like even that match he had against Jinder, you don't really look at a Jinder match and think, oh, this match is going to be good. But then he actually made it a good match, right?
Yeah.
Samoa Joe, he's good. I do like Samoa Joe. I think that they're probably going to have a good match. And I would say that AJ Styles retains, but at the same time, if Samoa Joe got it, you can do some stuff with Samoa Joe, kind of give him some different, it would put a different direction in the company, right? But as of right now, I don't see AJ Styles, he's kind of the man at SmackDown, and I guess even the WWE at this point, let's be 100% honest. And so I would be a little bit weird if they looked at him and said, okay, well, we're going to take the title from you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think the only reason they would really want to take the title off of him is if they had even bigger plans for him. This is a guy that came in, and the story's been told to death, but I love telling it, is this is a guy that more or less when Vince brought him in, he just signed him more or less out of spite to New Japan and brought him in because he had a little bit of buzz. And had him destined and pegged for being just a mid-card guy, and AJ proved that what every wrestling fan knew about AJ Styles is he is phenomenal, and he has found his way at being, like you said, he is the guy right now. He is absolutely the guy. Brock's not around. Once Roman gets the title, then you can make the argument for Roman Reigns to be the guy, but right now, AJ Styles is the man, and it's surreal to see that, and I'm excited for this match. I do think AJ retains, but I would not complain if Samoa Joe won. Next up, second last match for this card is a singles match for the WWE Raw Women's Championship, the fact that the card is that this title is being placed in this spot and is gaining value from a card standpoint of being an important match, and just the title bounced around, so you can question the prestige of the championship, but regardless, this is a step forward in the right direction for women's wrestling. There's a lot you could say about the women's revolution and where all that is going, but you have Alexa Bliss defending her championship against Ronda Rousey. Is this Ronda's moment? Is this the crowning moment for Ronda?
I was a little bit skeptical when Ronda Rousey was coming into the WWE, right? Like, I think most people, maybe not skeptical, but you're kind of just thinking, you know, MMA is a beast, right? But WWE is a different beast altogether, right? But she's been doing a great job. She hasn't wrestled that often. I don't know exactly how long. I think only like five times or something like that. I don't know. But the I don't know. There's some value in the chase to the title. And so if you find a way for Alexa to retain, that just adds to that chase, right? Where what's going to happen next, sort of thing, right? But if you're going to give the title to Ronda, and it's and get not it being at one of the big four pay-per-views, I feel like you should just give it to her at SummerSlam then. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yep. No, and I think that I think this is the time. I think she's going to be champion heading into the Evolution pay-per-view. So it would make most sense for her to beat Bliss and then hold on to the title. It's just going to be interesting to see who's competitive against Ronda and what type of matches moving forward. Ultimately, I think the main event, the last show to go on for next year's WrestleMania is Ronda versus Charlotte. So I think this could be the build for a colliding force between the two of them.
And I agree. You're completely right. I forgot about the whole all women's pay per view. It would make sense if Ronda Rousey went to that pay per view with the title. At this point, you could kind of build her as an unstoppable force, because I think most people just look at her and think, yeah, in a true women's WWE division, she would be at the top of the pile, right? So, you know, give her the titles. Of course, she's going to get a big run with it. And I feel like once she gets the title, then you can start looking at booking her long term against some people like Charlotte or whoever has the title. Or you can even bring a couple of the girls or the women, I should say, from NXT up and have them being like you're an unstoppable force, but I'm willing to go against you. Like, I feel like you can do that with some of the names there. Yeah. I don't know. It should be good. I'm excited to see what she does with this match. And so we'll see.
Yeah, this is definitely going to be a nice test for Ronda, who's been impressive in all her showings. So let's see what she does here, and God only knows where they're going to head in. It could easily be where she Bliss retains and Ronda wins the title at Evolution. That could be the crowning moment there. So there's a lot of things that could potentially happen heading into that pay-per-view. And now, this hurts me, but we're heading to the main event, the final match on the card. Brock Lesnar defends his Universal Championship against Roman Reigns. How much does the crowd just boo this match? Do they leave early again?
I don't know. They're really pumping it up. We did talk about it at the beginning of the podcast. So I don't really want to repeat anything I've said, but I don't know. Like, I'm just thinking, you know what? I think this is time to just let this one die. Sometimes you get a storyline and it's not connecting with the audience. As I said last time, like I don't know a single person who's thinking to themselves, this is the match that I'm coming for. I'm buying a ticket to SummerSlam because of Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns. I'm sure they're out there. I'm sure there are people who are doing that. but I don't know any of them personally, and I don't know if I'd even be friends with them. So I'm just joking, but they, I don't know. Like, you know, we'll see. I think Roman wins. It makes sense for Roman to win. But if Brock Lesnar, if there's any chance that Brock Lesnar could be holding the UFC belt and the WWE belt simultaneously, it may be enough that Vince will say that's the image that I need to see, right? And it is, despite what anybody says, that would be a captivating image to have. You know what I mean?
You cannot deny seeing that would be an image that you would have thought even 5-6 years ago wouldn't be possible, and now we're in the realm of like this could actually happen. This could be an iconic little picture that you're like, holy crap, I can't believe that happened. There's a lot of factors with that to make that picture happen. There are reports that Brock is having a closed door meeting with top WWE officials, including Vince, and there's been some speculation, and I guess you would call it joking, about a potential Brooklyn screw job. Could there be any shenanigans that happen? And is Brock Lesnar the guy you really want to have a screw job happen to? Because he could murder everyone in that front row. Easy.
It would be interesting. It would be a little different. We've talked about the Montreal Screwjob quite a bit. You and I personally just like, you know, hanging out or whatever, because for us, like that was a point when both of us as big Bret Hart fans and both of us as Shawn Michaels fans and me as the ultimate Stone Cold fan, like all of those major storylines around that era of WWE somehow connected with the Montreal Screwjob. Even it was such a big deal that even it affected WCW. Like, how many storylines can you say affect everything? You know what I mean? Like, it was such a big moment in the company that you can almost put, like, if you were to build an era system, it would be like the, you know, BCE versus the AD, right? Like, it changed everything from that point on, right? Like I'm not pumping it up too much because it was a crazy moment, right? And it changed so much of WWE as we know it, right? But if they, sorry.
You're absolutely spot on with that. That is a moment that I think any wrestling fan learns about, and in some ways even becomes obsessed with gathering information on the Montreal Screwjob and just the ramifications of that moment.
What I was building to is I don't know if you could ever you would never be able to pull that off again. Like everything happened at the right moment. Like, and if they tried to artificially create a screw job and you know, you could argue that they might have did it the first time, but it didn't feel like it. You know what I mean? I think if they tried to artificially make the Brooklyn screw job, and I think that actually might turn off some fans. You know what I mean? Especially fans who remember the Montreal screw job and who remember all that stuff. Right. So I don't know. It would be strange. I doubt it would work out if they did do it. And, you know, I don't know.
Oh my God. That's probably going to be the finish to SummerSlam, is Roman's going to get, there's going to be a Montreal screw job with Roman. That's going to be the finish. And that's the storyline they're going to carry on. And then Brock's going to disappear. Doug, this isn't good. No.
You know, as long as they throw Strowman and Nicholas in there, I'm down for anything. Like, as
Nicholas calls out Brock Lesnar for screwing over the hero Roman Reigns, and it's like WrestleMania. I believe it's WrestleMania 9 where Bret versus Yokozuna and Hogan comes out, and Bret waves Hogan on. Roman's gonna wave Nicholas on to go on and face Brock in the ring, and that's gonna be the finish. And Nicholas will hit the big boot and the leg drop and the 1-2-3. So there we go. That you've heard it here first. The ending of SummerSlam.
No, as long as Mr. Fuji's in there to throw some lime salt in somebody's eyes, I'm down. So that's
I don't know if Mr. Fuji's still alive.
Yeah, I know. I'm a jerk. I'm sorry, everybody. But the no, you know what they need to do is they need to, for one night only, bring back, like, remember when New Day for a very short amount of time had that, like, black preacher gimmick that they're doing. They need to bring them back just for SummerSlam and somehow incorporate it into that final match.
Just doing anything to kind of get people's attention. Look, we're doing all this stuff. Pay attention. Please don't leave. Because I do fear that this match is going to get eaten alive by the crowd.
And the thing is there's even just so much general hate for it that even if they do have a good match, people just might hate it for the sake of hating it. What I mean?
Yeah.
And so I don't know. We'll see. What happens with it.
I really like Roman and Brock 1 from WrestleMania 31. I thought they had a good match. It's just with everything that they're going with the storyline in every direction. There are definitely some possibilities of things that could happen, but I just don't foresee any of it happening to entertain me. And I do honestly think the image will be Brock walking out with the title. And I don't know where you go with Roman after that.
Yeah, and we should actually do a drinking game when we're watching it. Every time you see a super punch or an F5, you have to take a shot.
You have to finish your whole drink. So by the end of the night, you're out on your feet staring at the lights.
Actually, that might make the match even better. But the problem is you'd be like, you'd be trying to finish your last drink, and then it'd be a Superman punch. Oh my goodness, it's an F5. Oh my goodness, it's a Superman punch. And you're like, oh my goodness, I'm going to get hammered by in like 4 minutes or whatever.
You're already like three or four drinks behind, or even shots, you're like four or five shots behind, and you're like, oh no, I can't keep up because of this match. Because I think that's what a bulk of this will be, is a lot of big matches. But Doug, thank you for coming on and talking about SummerSlam and talking about NXT. Talking about Raw, SmackDown, and Jim the Anvil Neidhart. This was I quite enjoyed this. Any last thoughts, feelings, thoughts, concerns, jokes, stories?
I don't know, but yeah, it was good. We went a long time. I was surprised how long. Time just kind of slipped away from us, I guess. But yeah, I'll still see what SummerSlam happens, and I'll try to make it a little bit easier and make it out for more of these podcasts here. So
yeah, no, we'll definitely keep going, because I think we're moving along in a nice direction here. I think that there's a lot of wrestling podcasts from at least my side of things, so I'm sure that there'll be coverage for all facets, and I'm sure Doug will be back as we will eventually get into more IC title and talking just general all things wrestling, and getting your feel for your views on professional wrestling, which I always enjoy hearing, and I find that I quite enjoy talking to you about wrestling. So this has been good, and you can find all the stuff for Stick Boy. Me and Mo from We Talk Wrestling had just finished a podcast on the G1, on the Big Japanese Tournament. So if you have any interest in that, check that out. And we'll more than likely be back with Doug to talk more wrestling. So stay tuned, and we will return.